Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
I'm ducking out, you're ducking out. Let's duck out together, see what it's all about.
Ducking out, ducking out, ducking out, ducking out.
Hi, and welcome to Diking Out, a podcast where a couple of dykes dike out each week about training news, and then we also invite a special guest to dike out with us about a topic that is relevant to the lesbian, gay, bisexual, all the sexuals world, except heterosexual. The show's not for you. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
And I'm Sarah York, and today we are diking out with Sarah Kennedy.
She is the host of the Dwellin' on Ellen podcast, and we'll tell you a little bit more about her later.
So a little intro about who Sarah and Carolyn are and how we know each other. We are writers together on a show called The Box, which we'll kind of get into a little bit later, I'm sure. We're the resident homosexuals on the writing staff.
Yeah. I approached Sarah about wanting to do this podcast for lesbians, about being lesbians, because there's a lot to it.
Yeah, there is a lot to it.
It's not as easy as they make it look on TV. So there are a lot of different
topics. Not as easy as it looks on YouTube porn.
Yeah. Not as many press-on fingernails. So, yeah, we want to set the record not straight.
I like that.
And kind of dive into different areas and just talk about, like, what's relevant to lesbians week to week. Get a lot of cool guests to dike out with us. But, yeah, in the time since I brought it up to Sarah to do this podcast, I have gotten divorced and remarried, which is more of a reflection on how quickly I got divorced and remarried than on how long it took us to do this. But yeah, there's a lot to cover. So yeah, I am a married lesbian American, and very, very proud of it. Very happy to be gay. Yeah. The alternative is terrifying to me.
Very. The alternative is so sad to me. Like, I have so many straight female friends, and I look at them like they're like these foster dogs that are going on like week 58 in the shelter, and you're like, oh, it's gonna happen for you. I can't help you. I don't have the time or the energy. I'm sorry, my schedule's crazy, but like, you're gonna find someone. I know you will. It's a rough world out there. I am also super gay, and I am in a relationship with a woman who was straight until we met. So that's something we can talk about later. But
yeah, that will definitely be a future topic. Dating straight ladies. We'll hit on that a tiny bit today.
We're going to have an entire episode probably devoted to that particular topic later, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think we can get right into it. So a couple things that we saw in the news this week. First, I want to bring up Tig Notaro came out and sort of came out strong against Louis C.K., not mentioning him by name, more to be, I guess, a little bit polite. But Louis C.K. has been accused of in the past of masturbating in front of female comics, mm-hmm. which are his colleagues.
Right.
So imagine any other industry of someone you work with closing you into a conference room with them and being like, hey, we have a meeting, and then like whipping out his dick
right.
and jerking off. That's horrifying.
Yeah.
But a lot of men in comedy do not see this as like a workplace, or they don't consider female comics their colleagues.
Yeah.
So they think that a lot of times that women are just there for their own enjoyment
mm-hmm.
And to be their audience to either bad jokes or jerking off. And that's not the case. And this is especially interesting because Louis C.K. is kind of credited with launching Tig Notaro into the mainstream when she had her famous set at the Largo where she came out talking about having cancer. Cancer and her mom dying and all of that. Great set called Tig Notaro Live. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm laughing because it's like it looks like Tig Notaro Live, but she's like, no, it's Live.
Yeah. Don't die.
And yeah, I mean, Louis C.K., like obviously whenever you, for the most part, come out with allegations mm-hmm. of sexual misconduct around men, nothing happens to them. And Louis C.K. is still getting paid top dollar at the top of his game and hasn't really denied these allegations.
Yeah,
but
I was going to say, what's his, I mean, he hasn't really formally said anything about this because this has been kind of like, it's been like in the news orbit in the comedy world, I think, for at least a couple years, right? Like
yep.
a year or so until the actual solidified rumor, you know, not it went from being kind of a rumor in the community as like, this fucking happens and he is doing these things. Do you think he's going to even, does he have to fucking address it? Is he just going to get it? Like,
he sort of addressed it by saying, I don't have to address this.
How very Louis C.K. of him.
Yeah, and that's a nice privilege to have where you don't think you need to address it. And then somebody called them out on it, and he wanted to get that person's phone number or something weird like that to talk to them about it, and nothing really happened from there. And then it mm-hmm. just kind of got swept under the rug. And, you know, but before it even came out, it was just kind of a thing that comics knew. And Sarah Kennedy and I are both stand-ups, and you hear these rumors that go around, and then it usually takes like enough accusations where someone actually
yeah.
takes it public. But for a while, you get murmurs of people who are being creeps and like beyond creeps, like sexual assault. That's
yeah, like actual predator status for sure. Which I believe whipping your dick out in the middle of a room should qualify
yeah.
when there are other people in the room.
Yeah, yeah, who are unsuspecting.
Mm-hmm. So. For you two, then, as, like, I'm not a stand-up, I've never done it, as gay women in stand-up particularly, what's, like, your general vibe from, like, the straight male comedy crowd? Like, do they kind of bro out with you a little bit or try to? Like, how does that work?
I mean, I think I've gotten a lot more bro-y outy moments where they're just like, yeah, you and me, man, just look at that over there. And then I'm like, nah, it's not like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't had too much of that. I actually got more of that in the actual workplace. My first job out of college, the boss man there would send around an email like at Christmas time of like all these topless women in Santa hats. I'm not kidding. And
oh my god,
I think this guy's been deported. I don't even think he lives
yeah.
anymore. He is terrible. And he sent this around, and I'm the only woman on the email, and it's all the men and me. And I'm like, why did you send me this email? And he's like, oh, you like tits. And I'm like, I'm not a man.
Yeah. You're like, no, I'm attracted to the humans that they might be attached to, possibly not all of them, but what?
Yeah, I don't just sit around objectifying women.
Yeah.
And if I want to see boobs, I look in a mirror every day. It's cool. It's not
yeah.
a big thrill. And yeah, so I wrote a sketch one time about that where it's like men want to treat you as like one of the guys, not realizing that like we're not like one of the guys. Like we love women, but we don't like catcall women.
Right. Exactly.
You know, we don't think that women exist purely for our enjoyment and our amusement.
Yeah.
We treat them like humans
yeah.
and equals, which is why lesbians are better than most people.
Which is really the general theme of this whole podcast. So.
Yeah, yeah. If you're going to be listening to Dyking Out, I hope you're on board with recognizing the superior nature of lesbians specifically. And how we treat people. So so related to the Louis C.K. thing, it was great that TIG came out about that. And it's also this thing where I'm very choosy about the men in my life and the male friends that I have because I have no tolerance for having predators or misogynists in my life. So any of my male friends, if you're listening, you do have some sort of stamp of approval.
You made it.
You made it. Because I literally don't like most men.
Right.
Most men. I'm just kind of tolerating you for mostly
That's
business purposes. But I will admit that some are all right, and those are the ones that I'll associate with. Like, so good on TIG for being like, I don't care how famous Louis C.K. is and what repercussions this has for my career. I'm going to let people know that, like, no, I'm not going to tolerate having a sexual predator. And it's unfortunate that he's, like, the executive producer of her show.
Right.
But apparently has no involvement in it beyond that. It's just kind of him, like, peeing on his territory, I guess.
It's a bold move on her part, especially when she has such, like, such a personal stake in his relationship with her. In a way, I mean, at this point in her career, she's pretty well established. But like, I don't know. It's one of those things. It's like these men that do things in their careers that are good, either personally for you or for like the broader world. At what point are we letting them get away with something because their body of work is? Because I mean, there are aspects of Louis C.K.'s act that I've enjoyed so much over the years. Because he does kind of acknowledge that women are, like, in some ways, he has jokes and bits that talk about how women are, like, these stronger, the stronger, you know, species. And that, like, he jokes about women putting up with men. Like, why the fuck would any woman want to put up with a man? That kind of thing. And then he goes and does shit like this. It's like, ugh, like, you're so good in some ways. And then you fucking do these terrible things and now I hate you. And it's, I don't know. It's hard to kind of, like, reconcile that with someone that you consider... I personally have been a fan of his, like, with asterisks after for a long time.
Yeah.
But this is just, like, now I'm just like, all right. You go in the pile with the rest of them, like, you just can't.
It validates that instinct to be suspicious
of
all male members of society. Because even if they seem like they understand that women are humans and they understand the challenges that we face on a daily basis, that's not going to stop them from whipping their dicks out.
Yeah.
And
in a figurative or, in this case, quite literal sense.
But then somewhat related to that, most lesbians are familiar with Joss Whedon. And this one was kind of a tricky one for me this week. I felt like I've been defending Joss Whedon online a lot, which I hate to do. I hate defending men. They don't need us.
No.
Every time I see women coming to the defense of men, I'm like, they don't need you.
No.
They don't need us for any of that. But it is unfortunate that he's now kind of being conflated with Louis C.K. because the new, like, these articles came out around the same time this week, and I think it was IndieWire or something. Mm-hmm. It had, like, the two of them, then some other dude with a beard being like, oh, look at these terrible men who pretend to be feminists. Now, to get you up to speed with Joss Whedon, if you're not familiar, his wife wrote basically a letter to the public being like, you don't know who Joss Whedon really is. He was a serial cheater in our marriage over 15 years. He was cheating on me with a bunch of people and with young actresses and people that he worked with. And he used feminism as kind of this shield to keep himself covered and mask this behavior. And it for first I thought that was kind of a very malicious letter to send out.
Kind of a low blow on her part. Like, it was just...
Yeah, he was terrible, but I do think what happens in a relationship, as long as it's not illegal, as long as you're not...
no one's really a victim in any way. I mean, she...
Yeah, I mean, emotional yeah. abuse is terrible, and also being cheated on is horrible, and mm-hmm. it's a traumatic thing. Unfortunately, it's not an uncommon thing, and I know a lot of people who I think are phenomenal humans who cheat, and it's a very complicated thing, and it's sometimes it's like a survival tactic.
Yeah.
It's people who can't confront the situations they're in, and they don't have the proper tools for dealing with it, so then they act out in this way. There are a lot of reasons that people cheat. I'm mm-hmm. not pro cheating, but I'm also don't think that we should demonize people, because
yeah.
most cheaters I think are somewhat remorseful of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they love the fact that they're doing it, unless they're one of those like Wall Street bros,
right?
Or something.
And it's like a badge of honor or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and John, like, and I'm, this is like, we'll find out over the course of this podcast the many ways in which I should have my lesbian card revoked. But I am woefully unfamiliar with Joss Whedon's most popular work, Buffy, obviously, like Firefly, some of the other stuff.
Yeah.
And I know he...
Do you know his, like, unpopular work?
I'm only into the stuff he did in high school.
Oh, yeah.
The Avengers?
Yeah. Yeah. I am actually familiar
Lion
with that.
Lion King 2.
Yeah. But, so, as far as Joss Whedon and his work, like, in the kind of feminist realm, what's he most... Like, what's the whole thing there?
So
he does good. I mean, he's a good character writer, right? Like,
I've never been a Joss Whedon super fan per se. I love Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched the series through a few times probably at this point. And when Buffy came out, it was definitely, you know, a time when there weren't a lot of strong female characters on TV. And yes, you know, now everyone's scrutinizing his work and being like, 10 times Joss Whedon was problematic with his feminism. Here's the thing, though, with it, we're never going to get a perfect male ally.
Yeah.
We're never going to get a perfect female ally. It's hard to expect perfection out of an ally. And if we attack people who I think their intentions are good, I mean, I think you can call out people and try to educate them and try mm-hmm. to bring them along. But to do this whole, like, just really crucifying
yeah.
them over, you know, just... Maybe some ignorance on their part, but
yeah.
one thing, I mean, for lesbians, I think Joss Whedon and Buffy the Vampire Slayer was really important, because the storyline of the relationship of Willow and Tara was the first time, really, that you had this very, like, a long-term lesbian relationship. It wasn't a sweeps thing. It wasn't just, like, one kiss, one episode.
Okay.
They were in a committed relationship, and they were treated like a normal relationship. It wasn't,
okay.
like, look at these lesbians. It wasn't created for the male gaze. And it had, like, some nods to it, you know, like, Xander, I think, made a couple of creepy comments about it, but it felt, like, very... real,
uh-huh.
and they were treated with humanity and not as something that was like totally weird, and they were like loved and supported by their friends,
okay.
and by their family,
okay.
and it was so important to see that,
especially for young viewers, you know, like, I mean,
yeah.
we grew up with basically no representation on television that I can think of at all, and that would have been probably the only thing as, like, a teenager that I would have saw and thought, like, oh.
Yeah, it was like that and Once and Again.
Oh,
I think,
yeah.
Were...
yeah.
What is Once and Again?
Oh, my gosh.
Misha Barton and...
Evan Rachel Wood.
Evan Rachel Wood.
Really? What? Evan
they're,
Rachel Wood?
They're little babies.
Yeah.
They're really, really,
little
really
babies
young.
Really?
With feelings for each other.
Oh, my God.
And passing notes and having emotional moments. But that it never really played out... too much past the one kiss, right?
Yeah, the show got canceled. And right as they were, like, really becoming, like, a couple.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And it's also, like, this big family drama. So there was, like, a million other storylines going on at the same time. So you'd be like, quick, get to the Jesse and stuff. Yeah. And stuff.
That's one of the best things about YouTube is that you can just watch the lesbian storyline of any show without having to watch the rest of the show.
Well, so, like, it takes you a few minutes, too.
Yeah. Like,
for all shows in the history of shows.
South of Nowhere, I've watched every season, but only the lesbian storyline. I have no idea what's going on within. Once I watched a full episode, I'm like, who are these people?
That's great.
Like, she had two brothers?
I know. I was like, why is her brother black? What did I miss? He wasn't in any of the lesbian storyline.
That's why he left the show, actually. Do you know that? He was really uncomfortable with the fact that they were, like, they were diving really deep into that storyline, and he left, like, the second season or whatever, or the third season.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow. So Joss Whedon, like, it obviously takes some type of, you know, being in tune with feminism to write these characters like this. Who,
especially, like, 15, 20... what is it? It's about 20 years ago since Buffy premiered, right? Like 97 or 98 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's like, it really bothered me when I saw the article where Joss Whedon and Louis C.K. were in the same photo. Because I was like, in what fucking world are we putting a guy who whips his dick out and jerks off in front of people who did not ask for that and don't want it? How are we, like, putting him in the same box as someone who did something that is not necessarily, it's not good, obviously, but it's, like, not fucking that. It's not, he didn't victimize anybody. He cheated on his wife. That's shitty and that sucks.
Yeah.
But, like, being a bad husband doesn't somehow negate or erase the important things he's done creatively, which is different than saying being a fucking serial, like, predator does kind of negate some of the good things you've done. Like, yes. I think Louis C.K. deserves to lose some of his cred for, like, as far as his work goes, because of the things he does. Whereas Joss Whedon, I think you can look at these things. You can look at someone being a shitty husband and, of, you know, an active feminist, like a creative feminist, and it's not like a zero-sum thing, I don't think, in his case.
I will say, though, that in the letter that his wife wrote, she mentioned times where he was talking to her about how his power was bringing all these girls around, and that he felt like a god. And, like,
yes.
He
was, okay.
So there, in a way, it's kind of like he was, not only was he using feminism as a shield, sometimes he kind of is like a baiting,
like,
thing, or after a while, it just kind of became
sucks.
This.
Yeah, so there is that where there are these power dynamics in Hollywood where mostly men wield a lot of influence, and then they have a lot of women coming to them where they don't have to be an active predator.
Yeah.
their position of power is drawing these people in, and I definitely think that carries a responsibility with it. When you have power comes responsibility, and if you are taking advantage more or less and of young women who are, you know, new to the business and whatever and aren't...
Were they saying that he was using it as like a pickup artisty kind of way?
Well, we don't know. That's the thing. So nobody else, it wasn't like this letter came out and then all these people came out and said, oh, yes, he totally used his feminism to lure me in. That's why I'm kind of like, maybe we need to back off of this, because this is the word of a scorned woman who I totally, her anger is valid.
Yeah.
It's really shitty. I feel very sorry for what she went through. I can only imagine how traumatic that was. I've had friends who were in relationships and found out that they had been cheated on with many, many women, and it's definitely traumatizing and it's terrible. And you're like,
especially when
you're what a shitty
partner,
thing to
your spouse
do.
Is a famous person, and now everyone in the world knows, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It sucks.
But how does she really know that he was using his feminism that way? I don't know. I think it's really making a lot of assumptions, but I don't think we should revoke his feminist card and, like, just yet. I'm totally willing for anybody to prove me wrong, but I think we're just so quick to tear people down.
Yeah. And I think writers need to get a little better at writing articles like that? Like the IndieWire thing. It's like, how fucking lazy are you that you are literally like these darn men? Like, come on.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's like, it's kind of, yeah. It was that part annoyed me the most, I think, was his treatment in that kind of knee jerk reaction from writers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right. So do we have any more news stuff to talk about?
I mean, I know that you really want to talk about Taylor Swift.
I do want to talk about Taylor Swift. So
briefly, though, I'm going to time this.
Yeah.
We're not going to give her too much of our time.
God. All right. So that screenshot of this fucking is so I didn't bother to look any further into this because I got so angry about the screenshot.
Yes.
Is the video released, the music video, or is that just a still promotion?
It's a still from the music video that's going to be premiering tomorrow night at the VMAs.
Oh,
so if you're listening
Jesus.
To this now, the VMAs have already happened, and we don't know how the full video plays out. But the still, obviously, a lot of people thought it looked a lot like Beyonce's
formation. It does look a lot like
formation.
And I actually just watched Lemonade in its entirety a few days ago because I do it every once in a while just for self-care. and because my girlfriend hadn't seen it, so we watched it. And it's like, I mean... My like Beyonce fandom is just I'm obsessed with her, and I'm obsessed with her the creative direction she went with Lemonade, and I find Lemonade to be one of the most beautiful visual representations of like music I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And the director Melina Matsoukas also directs Insecure, and like she like her visual like her aesthetic and everything that she does I think is breathtaking. And of course Taylor Swift has a still from a video that looks exactly it's like. It might as well have been shot on the set that fucking Lemonade was shot on. And it's just like, this girl's fucking nerve. It is unreal. Her ego, I feel like, could just fucking power an office building for a day. Like, sustainable energy from this woman's fucking nerve. I just cannot stand Taylor Swift. I think she, like, the level, like, the audacity of her to pick from other people's creative work that directly is one of the most breathtaking things I've ever seen in my life. Yet she continues to be so fucking famous for all this. And I know the album, I'm sure the album is going to be some sort of, like, reinvention, like, coming out of a cocoon thing, which is kind of what Lemonade was in a lot of ways, was this sort of, like, Beyonce kind of coming out of this personal struggle that she had and this huge like this life event that she had that she went through and came out of, regardless of how you feel about how she handled it, but she came out of it this different person, and it was just so amazing. And I can just see Taylor Swift fucking digging her little white fingers and twisting some bullshit like album or some whole personal reinvention thing out of it. It drives me absolutely crazy. I cannot stand it.
I'm actually really glad she did it because the the memes yesterday were cracking
me up. The memes are amazing.
My favorite one, fellow comedian Marsha Belsky,
so good,
posted an image with the lyrics, my daddy Pennsylvania,
oh, yeah.
Mama from Pennsylvania, you mix that pencil with that Vania, I'm from Pennsylvania. I saw
one about I've got mayonnaise in my bag. Swag
mayonnaise in my
something.
Bag. Yeah, when he fucked me good, I take his ass to Pandora.
Yeah.
I don't have the Twitters up to give those people credit.
Oh my god,
but,
I know.
A lot of good memes coming out of that.
Such a bummer.
And when I brought this up to you, Sarah, I was like, you know, this doesn't really have to do with being a big old dyke, but. You are not convinced.
I'm not convinced she's straight.
Yeah.
I feel like Taylor Swift is, and yes, I have some
we
have some
two
validation.
Sarahs in the room.
The two Sarahs agree.
Yeah, agree.
I think that Taylor Swift is basically, she's the girl especially every like androgynous dykey chick like me, has some experience with, like the pretty girl who, like, makes out with you. She's the girl who, like, actively dates guys, but, like, makes out with, like, the androgynous lesbian and then, like, has a boyfriend, but, like, has the, like, tries to string along the lesbian emotionally. I feel like I guarantee she has had some sort of situation. I don't know. I feel like mm-hmm. that little posse that she runs with. Who's the one that is gay that's her friend? Is it, Clara Delevingne or whatever?
Oh, yeah, Cara. Yes.
Cara Delevingne.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just have a feeling. Yeah. It's my instinct. It's my gut instinct. And if in 40 years she comes out, I will be the most excited 71-year-old ever in proclaiming that I was right. I don't know. I'm not convinced.
I don't know if she would ever necessarily come out.
But, like, books will be written after she's dead. That are like, you know, her and Carly Kloss were very close friends.
Yeah.
Like Whitney Houston. except I'm not going to compare Taylor Swift to my personal goddess, Whitney Houston. Rest in peace.
I love how we all have our goddesses that we're just, like, revealing right now. Like, just so you guys know, we're all super fans of the following.
Man, Whitney Houston.
She's amazing.
I'll save that for another time.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like Taylor Swift is that... I don't know. I have a hard time using the word straight because, like, I think it's because I personally have so many experiences with women who identify as straight that it's, like, they're all kind of straightish, like, straight, you know? Like,
yeah.
You say it, like, you trail off at the end, like, oh, she's straight. You never complete the word because you don't want to...
I mean,
that's not true.
Taylor Swift does remind me of one of my ex-girlfriends who is now married to a man. And I think, I mean, she looked a little bit like her, but also it was this kind of playing a victim a little bit and maybe not feeling like you're not getting enough recognition for what a hero you are.
Right.
I think that's how Taylor Swift feels. But other Sarah, you got excited when we said Taylor Swift.
What
are you thinking?
I really liked 1989 a lot. And I had like a lot of hope for who she was. Because she kind of went through this journey where she was becoming like the tiniest amount of woke that she could do to not alienate her like country base or whatever. And I was very excited about that. And then again, her and Carly Kloss, they're constantly together, and I had this like because I love like subtexty stuff, and so I just kind of like latched onto her Instagram to be like, and what are the girlfriends doing today? And so that was a very fun ride for me. And then she just kept making wrong choices, and lately she is just, there's nothing she's doing right at all.
No.
And that song, if you guys have heard the song, I was like, okay.
Oh, the new one?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't heard it yet.
Oh boy. I keep trying to listen to it, thinking it's going to get better, or I'm just like maybe missing something. Or it is.
No.
So and it has movements in it where it's like seven different songs all smashed together.
Oh, no.
And each movement like gets a little worse every time. And then it gets really, really bad at one point, and then it comes back to just bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're going to get to hear it a million times.
I can't wait.
Yeah, eventually it's going to just be in our subconscious at all times.
She reminds me of so many girls I made out with in college who are currently married to, like, schlubby guys named Chad or something.
I like it.
But, like, they all still like all my Instagram photos. It's like, get the fuck out of here.
Taylor Swift, though, she's had so many boyfriends and has gone through so many men. Like, I'm afraid if you hug her too hard, like, semen would come out. Like, that's how many men she's gone through.
Well, some of them have to be business arrangements, though. Like,
I think
a lot of those were business arrangements.
Yeah.
Wasn't Jake Gyllenhaal one of them?
Yeah.
Because he's, like, heavily rumored to be gay.
Yeah.
In the whole... I mean, I think that was kind of a convenient thing for him. I don't know if he is. Whatever. But
Jacob from Twilight was, like, such a...
Oh,
that
God.
That seems like the biggest business transaction
the Taylor,
of all time.
Taylor Lautner, whatever his name is.
She's dated some hotties, but it's just like, God damn, girl.
She's with a Kennedy now.
She is?
Yeah. Not Sarah Kennedy.
not yet.
A different Kennedy.
Not yet.
Or no, she used to be. I don't think... I might be...
No, I think you're right.
I'm not with that. At one point, she was with one of the Kennedy...
Wait, wasn't it Schwarzenegger's oldest son? Or his...
No.
Because he technically is a Kennedy.
Yeah, it was Robert Kennedy's grandson, I think, who's very good looking.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a good segue into talking about our coming out journeys.
Yes.
On the theme of this episode.
Yeah. So even though she's been already joined in the conversation, I do want to introduce once more. Sarah Kennedy is here today diking out with us. And I know Sarah through doing stand-up comedy. She is the producer of the She-Devil Comedy Festival, which is happening in New York in October. Sarah, what year is this of the festival?
Oh, I was like, it's 2017.
Where am I?
Oh, it's got it. I think it's about the fifth year.
The fifth year. Yeah. Okay. It's a lot of fun. So many talented women competing for the She Devil Trophy, which is actually quite hefty.
It's the Stanley Cup of comedy festivals.
It is. I have a great time every time I go, and was also featured on a video on Glamour.com, so you can also look that up. And if you are in New York City, you can see her perform all over the place. Super funny. Sarah Kendi, thank you so much for being here with us and diking out with us today.
Yay. Thanks for letting me come over, and thanks for letting me interject a bunch during this. That kind of pop culture stuff is like my jam, so yes. I love to talk about it.
So. Yes. So yeah, let's start by each kind of briefly giving our coming out story. You want to go first?
Mine happened like so much later than everyone else I've ever met and talked to about this subject. I didn't actually fully know I was gay until I was about 20 years old, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so my coming out process began in college, and I went to school in a very small, very rural, like, fucking little ass town, Maryville, Missouri, and which is as small as it sounds. So I was like the lesbian at the school, and then, you know, and it just kind of went from there. But I had, given the circumstances, you know, being from the Midwest, coming out during college in a small school, I had actually a pretty I avoided some of the big pitfalls that a lot of people fall into in their coming out process. I was very lucky to have friends who were pretty supportive, parents who were supportive. My mom and her husband are like the most liberal people in the world. So I didn't really fully start to kind of become myself and be comfortable until I was about 23, 24-ish.
Did you have a moment of realization?
Yeah, I saw a dick for the only time in my life, and I literally said out loud, nope, and I got up and I left the room. And this poor guy, who I never really spoke to much after that, it was in college, and I was sort of in that phase where I was, like, trying to make out with boys just to be sure. I don't know. I was just like, well, all my friends are doing this. I need to do it, too, to fit in. And I was making out with this boy named Neil. And, like, that's such a name for a guy who, like, was the last stand of a lesbian's sexual experience. And then, and somehow his dick appeared. And I was just like, abso-fucking-lutely not. My soul rejected that moment. And it wasn't him. I'm sure he's not in tune with lesbian podcast world. He's not going to hear this. But, like, it just... That was, like, the moment where I was like, I know what I don't want, and that this whole thing, the person it's attached to, the whole fucking, all of them, I don't want.
I really hope Neil is listening so he knows the power that he wields.
The power that your very average dick wielded was just extraordinary. But when I first felt that very first little, like, kind of tingle that we're all familiar with, of like, oh, hello, like... this is what I now know is just attraction.
Yes.
Something that I hadn't felt ever. First of all, obviously, Mariska Hargitay on Law & Order SVU. Like, every lesbian's like, oh, yeah, of course. Like, she's going down in history as, like, the fucking singularity for, like, all lesbians between the age of, like, 20 and 50.
Yeah.
When I was a teenager watching Law & Order SVU was when I was, like, I didn't realize I had a crush on Mariska Hargitay. I just knew that I felt my body just igniting when she was on the screen. And it was, I don't know, I think that was probably when I knew I was different, maybe, but not necessarily that I was gay. And then I knew for sure I was gay in college. I was in a sorority, and already the story is not going where anyone thinks it's going, but we would all get together and watch Grey's Anatomy. And, Dr. Kelly Torres was like, I just was like the apex of hotness for me. Like, I still am obsessed with Sarah Ramirez, but she, when her character became, or, you know, like they started writing, I forgot when her lesbian storyline began. I never actually continued watching the show. I don't even know how her story progressed, but those few episodes that I did watch where she was hooking up with, I think it was that blonde doctor with the long hair, the first time they ever showed her lesbian storyline, I was, like, so fucking turned on. I like had to I had to leave the room. It was just like so intense. So that's kind of when I knew when I was about 19 or 20. And it's just been a blast ever since.
Sarah, how about you? Other Sarah.
Yeah. This is going to happen on this podcast a lot. I'm imagining you're going to have a lot of Sarahs. It's so interesting because I remember the first time I ever even said it to myself, I had this journal that I, like, I'd always started to write journals when I was, like, but I wasn't writing anything important or whatever, so I just would give up on them. Mm-hmm. And then I had this one brand new notebook, and I opened it up, and, like, within half a page, I wrote, like, I think I'm gay. But I'm not, probably not. But I might be. And then I just, like, from there, I just
yes.
kept the most, like, I look back on that journal sometimes now, and it's like every day is just like, what seemingly gay thoughts did I have that day? And it's just like, what do I think that means? And I would just like really yeah. like analyze the hell out of it.
Yeah. How old were you around that time?
Like 16.
Okay.
Yeah. And I had like collages. I had lots of collages. And so like I had pages that are just like whatever was in Entertainment Weekly that week mm-hmm. that was gay. So it'd be like a picture of Hedwig and the Angry Inch. And then it would be a picture of Evan Rachel Wood and Misha Barton from Once and Again. And yeah. then it would be Buffy. It would be like Willow and Tara. And the next page would be like drawing like girls holding hands or something, like really like basic stuff, but just yeah. kind of being like, what the hell does this mean? And then yeah. I think part of the reason why I love pop culture stuff so much is because without it, I never would have been able to like think through everything with in a safe place. Like,
that's what mm-hmm. the Republicans are afraid of.
I know. That's why I think
representation. This is their nightmare. Mm-hmm. That's what those 1 million moms yeah. are afraid of. Sarah's coming out story.
All 600 of the 1 million moms.
But 10% of the population is gay, so like a huge yeah. chunk of those million moms are yeah. probably gay moms. Yeah. But like I think that's why I think representation is so important, is because I was seriously became just this like historian of like lesbian culture throughout mm-hmm. the ages. Like I know I went into like just like all the terrible, terrible movies from the 80s that you would just
oh,
are like
man.
Like Claire of the Moon and Desert Hearts, like old ones that nobody even cares about at all. And I just wanted to know them so that I could have like this, like I could feel like I was smart about it before I even
yeah.
talked to another girl in a romantic sense. And so I think I was like, I had crushes with girls in high school, but I didn't have my first kiss or my first girlfriend until I was 18. So it took me like 2 years of research before
yeah.
I
yeah.
went into the field.
Right, right.
But that was cool. And then like knowing before I even wrote it down, I think came a little bit before that. I started watching Xena, like, really early. Like, I was in, like, maybe eighth grade or something, and I started
nice.
Watching it, and I was really into it, and I couldn't really figure out why, but I was really into
now
it.
Now we know.
Yeah. And then one time I made all my friends rent But I'm a Cheerleader because it had all the actors yes. and stuff from that time that I liked, and yeah. about halfway through I was like, I'm sorry I made us rent this, and I, like, turned it off, and they all were like, that's, maybe we could finish watching it, and I was like, no, I think everybody should leave. And then they left, and I turned it back
oh,
on
man.
And finished watching it.
Yeah.
And then I was the first person in my family to have an Amazon account, and, like, Amazon was still pretty new, but it was the way for me to, like, order and receive things privately.
Right.
Without my parents having to see it around, so I had But I'm a Cheerleader. I had, like, I don't know why, but I bought, like, all of Rufus Wainwright's albums.
Yes, and, I did, too.
And so, really? Yeah, like, yeah. I loved him, and he was, like, just this kind of, like a, I don't know, he was, like, such a sensitive gay boy that
yeah.
I was just, like, he's feeling
I read an article
feeling...
in Rolling Stone about him, and then just listening to his lyrics, I'm like, there's something about it. I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. So, sadness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like a lonely gay.
So there was that, and then, I mean, actually, like, telling people, the first person I ever told was my friend Kelly, because she was talking about her girlfriend, so I was like, well, this is safe.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
And then she told me about my friend Joey in that conversation, so then the next day I told him, and so I really only told other gay people that I was gay.
Yeah.
And then I kind of hoped that would be, like, the only gay I wanted to be was gay enough for other gay people to know. But
yes.
then,
yes.
Like, straight-seeming enough that I would just float through the world, and everybody would be like, well, whatever.
Yeah. yeah.
And so, like, I had, like, a binder in college or something that had, like, this giant picture of Tegan and Sarah in it, and they were still, like, really, like, not very well known.
Yeah.
And so I kept being like, is anybody...
Yeah.
Is anybody seeing what I got here? Not you guys. This person
it's
over
like
here.
When, it's like you're in this, like, a Sims game, and you just want this, like, rainbow, like, this rainbow diamond to float over your head, but only other
yeah,
rainbow diamonds
so
can
people
see
know.
It.
Yeah.
I always wanted to have that.
It would have been so nice.
Hard to know sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially now, even though more people are out, but when the hipster movement started happening, hipsters and lesbians, it's hard to tell them apart.
Yeah.
You have to... be like Nancy Drew and look for clues. I'm like, do they have plaster on their boot? Were they building
yeah.
a tiny house? Like, Is there a carabiner clip on their belt loop? I don't know.
I don't see one of those dog walker things on her belt. I don't know how many dogs are involved.
I always distinguish. It was always like slightly off hipster meant lesbian for me.
Yeah.
It's like one too many accessories.
Yeah.
For me, coming out, definitely some similarities in terms of I have a journal that I threw away because I remember being super happy in high school or loving high school. And then I read my diary and was like, oh, no.
Those were dark times.
Yeah. I had an entry that was like, I guess I'll cry myself to sleep again. And I felt so sad for my teenage self. But the one where I realized I was gay, I wrote, I think there's something wrong with me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I grew up Catholic. Not my parents weren't that Catholic, but my grandparents were pretty Catholic. They were liberal, but they were very Catholic. And I loved my grandparents. And I wanted to be close to them. And I thought – I never believed in the – necessarily, like, the stories.
Yeah.
But I thought that if you live your life following these rules, you'll live a good life. Because really, these are just like cautionary tales that people figured out years ago of, you know, like, don't steal, don't lie. Like, these are how to be a good person.
Mm-hmm.
So I did have some shame there.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
I definitely had so much like gay activity that I didn't realize how gay it was until after the fact, like you, Sarah. And like my walls in my bedroom, I had two walls that were basically shrines to Madonna. One was a giant poster where her shirt is definitely see-through and you can see her nipples.
Yes.
And nobody seemed to think that was off. That I had to. I'm so excited about that poster. I would fantasize about, like, oh, I better be so cool to be Madonna's boyfriend.
Yes.
And my sexual fantasies when I was going through puberty were of, like, me being a man, being able to be with a woman, because I didn't think you could do it as another woman. So your fantasies are like, oh, yeah, I wish, like, in another life, if I could have been a man, then I could have been Madonna's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Which, like, in would probably be the
terrible.
Worst.
Yeah. Now, honestly, I would not want to be Madonna's
today.
Girlfriend.
Oh,
well,
God.
I mean, maybe, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Probably treated like assistant number three.
Yeah, for sure.
And, yeah, so it was, like, a little bit of seeing things on the internet, but it wasn't until I was working at this movie theater with my best friend, and she called me one day, and she was like, you'll never guess who's gay. I'm like, who? And she told me this girl that we worked with, and the first thought in my mind was, that's so hot.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, my God, why was that my first thought?
Yeah.
And because she was, like, the first lesbian I knew who just looked like a normal girl. I mean, she was beautiful, and I always thought lesbian had to be this, like, you know, cargo pants wearing. Like
the Katie Lang caricature.
Which is fine. Yeah. which is fine, but just wasn't, like, I guess my type. So because I didn't look like that, I didn't think, like, that was me. And then I kind of realized, like you said, I felt like butterflies in my stomach for the first time because I'd never really been attracted to anyone. All of my straight behavior was all like a performance.
Yeah.
Right? I felt like I had to have boyfriends because all my friends had boyfriends, or I had to pretend
had
to be
to crush,
into guys,
or,
had to have a crush at all times. But it was always so arbitrary. I'm like, I don't know, like, who do I think might like me back?
And mine were very realistic. I was like, okay, who could I get? And it was always like, I was 6 feet tall at 12 years old, 13 years old. So I automatically, my pool of potential crushes was, like, reduced to, like, that one fucking tall kid in your class.
Yeah.
God, they were such nerds, every one of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that feeling the performative crush was a thing that I think is probably, it's got to be exclusive to gay men and women. I'm sure women more so, because I don't know. You just had to have one to fit in with your friends, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like, I mean, I'm not too close to my friends from high school anymore. I still like them all and everything, but when I did realize I was gay and I came out, it's not, I mean, some of them were really cool about it. The first person I came out to was my friend Rachel, who's just such a great person that I felt comfortable coming out to her because we had also, like, I don't know, we were into, like, being Wiccans, sort of, but, like, really, in, like, the slightest sense. Like, we bought a tarot deck and, like, one spell book, and we thought we were badass,
like,
and it was, like, this secret.
Oh, yeah.
You'd light a lot of pieces of paper on fire and hide them. Yeah.
Yes. And it lasted, like, maybe, like, a couple weeks or something that we did this. Like, it wasn't that involved, but I was like, oh, okay, we had that kind of secret, so now I can tell her that I'm bisexual. Because at the time, I thought that was more normal, and I hadn't dated a woman, but I had this, like, huge crush on this. On this girl I worked with, who actually ended up being my third girlfriend.
Ah.
And we were in a relationship for years, on and off for like 4.5 years or something. And I eventually got her. But like when the first time after finding out she was gay in person, I thought I was going to throw up.
Yeah.
I was so nervous, and all I wanted was to talk to her, but like I couldn't. And I was like thinking about her all the time, and she had a girlfriend, and it was...
I remember that feeling of when you find out that, like, some other girl is gay, especially when your social pool is so limited of women that you've actually met that are, like, confirmed lesbians, that it's, like, you get so fucking nervous. I went to when I was in college, and I was just kind of, I had both feet kind of out of the closet, still, the door was still open. There was one girl in my statistics class, I remember, and she was in the basketball team, and she was really tall like me, and she was definitely gay. Not at all my type. Like, But that was back when, like, even if they weren't your type, it was like, but they're also gay. Like, yes. You just have a crush by default. Even though, fucking no, that wasn't my type.
That was my first girlfriend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, just so off type. But because you have so few options, or you think you do, then that's who you go for. And I had the biggest crush on her. I was, like, so nervous every day in class around her. I can't even believe it. She had no personality. No, like, nothing about this girl was appealing in any way looking back. Like, she was such a dud, and she did not give a shit about me. And, like, just, like, was just, like, this like, no, I'm an athlete. She was just, like, a jock and didn't talk to anyone and, like, didn't think any of my jokes were funny, which I thought they were fucking hilarious. She was really so put off by me. But I had such a crush on her. And looking back, it's hilarious. Like, some of our first crushes, or in some cases first girlfriends, are just hilarious to look back on.
Oh, God. My sister still will make fun of me and be like, remember this person.
Yeah.
because my sister just thought that we were friends at the time, because I wasn't out to my sister. So I had this first girlfriend, and she was the first single gay person. Also worked at the movie theater.
This is quite a movie theater.
Yeah. First three girlfriends of mine were from this movie theater.
Is it because you guys had to wear polos for your uniform? Is that what attracted so many young lesbians there?
The shell necklaces.
The walls were pink and purple. I think there was something in the popcorn.
Sensible
I don't know.
Khakis is the uniform.
Yeah. I'm not kidding. There was a high concentration of gays, and that was one of the reasons that I worked there, was because, like, I actually got fired in May, and I was like, I was fired because I had to get surgery and couldn't work on Black Friday.
Oh my God.
But they, in their defense, teenagers make a lot of shitty excuses to get out of things. So they thought I was lying, but I legit was getting surgery. And one of the managers, who was really nice, was like, do you think you would come back months later? And it was like in that time in between when I found out that this one girl was gay, and then my friend was like, and I think this other girl there is gay, and, like, the other girl was the one that became my first girlfriend. But I remember at some point in the relationship, she was like, are you only with me because I like girls?
Because you don't know any other lesbians?
And I was like, no. It was the most unconvincing.
Oh, God. It was so, like, bad. Validation of the relationship.
But like, she wasn't even – she was – totally in love with someone else at the time. It was like neither of us were that into each other, but it was what was available.
Yeah.
But having that first girlfriend was the catalyst to – it gave me a reason to come out to my parents. Because before you have that first girlfriend, it's kind of weird to come out to people, because it's like, why are you telling me this? And
it's
then
like
you're also
theory.
Not – yeah. You're not sure of it. And I was lucky with my parents, too. They were supportive. They were a little bit – I mean, my mom was shocked,
really?
I guess – yeah, which is weird, because it's not like I had a ton of boyfriends or anything like that. And the boyfriends that I did have, I, like, literally did nothing more than hold their hands.
Yeah.
Like,
I never even had a boyfriend.
Yeah, I had – they were boyfriends in name only.
Yeah.
In name and, like, I guess homecoming dance dates.
Oh, God.
But my parents were really supportive, unlike that one ex that I mentioned, the one who was, like, my first crush. When she came out to her mom kicked her out of the house and made her go live with her dad. So I felt super fortunate because, you know, it's some people still to this day in 2017 have it tough.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
What was your coming out experience to your parents like, Sarah?
Well, it was, I mean, overall incredibly positive. My mom asked me about it. Like, I didn't even have to, like, be like, I'd like us to have a discussion, please. She was just like, because my first girlfriend's name was Erin, and she was like, are you and Erin more than friends?
Mm-hmm.
And then I just was like, we're not having this conversation. I, like, got up and left, and my mom, like, chased me down.
Aww.
And then we ended up, like, crying. And then she just had, like, that's cool. Like, it's totally fine. And then she had a bet going with her best friend about whether or not
amazing.
I was gay. Yeah. And then my mom bet that I was gay. And
she's like, she won.
Yeah, exactly. So she was like, excellent.
She won lunch at Olive Garden with her best friend.
So then, I mean, we talked for like 2 or 3 hours and cried. And then
great.
She, I mean, this part is a little weird. She, like, then went on to tell everyone for me in my family. So she told my dad for me.
I asked my mom to tell my dad, too.
That's nice. I didn't ask her to do it. My mom was just like, I got this. Don't worry about it. And I think he may have had a little bit of trouble with it, but my mom was like, that's on you, and you'd figure this out on your own.
Yeah.
So I think that that's pretty cool.
Okay.
And then she told, like, my grandma for me and all my aunts and uncles and everything. So, and then everybody was just like, cool. And then it just kind of, except they're cool and, like, they're all from Texas kind of way. So, like, they'll say things like, we're just so happy that you can be who you are.
Yeah.
And they just say that all the time. It's like, no, Sarah's just who she is.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
I had a similar, my mom, well, I think my mom and her husband, I'll have to confirm this with them, but I'm pretty sure they tried to get me to come out. We were in the car and I was driving. And
it's not a good time.
No. And it was like the middle of winter and I was driving us somewhere and they, as if they had rehearsed it before, like, it felt a little scripted. They were. It was right around Prop 8, with the whole Prop 8. So, 2008 or whenever that. It was right around when Ellen got married.
Okay.
So my stepdad, out of nowhere, goes, you know who I really like? I really like Ellen DeGeneres. And my mom was like, Dave, I love her too. I think it's so wonderful that she's married and, you know, all this stuff happening in California is making me sick. This Prop 8, no one should be discriminated against. And Dave was like, yeah. And they were like, yeah, it's fine to be gay. And I just, like, was in silence, like, white knuckles on the steering wheel. Like, get us. We were going to P.F. Chang's at the time, which is, like, the most delightfully Midwestern part of that story.
That's so good.
They're so cute. And then it took, like, a few more months, and I eventually, my three best friends from high school, who I'm still really close with, we're at my house, and our house was like the meeting place kind of for my friends always, and my mom was in the room, and they had been kind of pressuring me to tell her, and they were texting me like under our throw pillows, tell your mom, like, we're all here, just do it. And it was Thanksgiving Day, and I finally was like, because my mom, I had this friend named Jeff in college who my mom loved. My mom was obsessed with Jeff, and she thought he was the most amazing young man. I know she wanted me to marry him.
Yeah.
Turns out he's gay, too. Yeah. But anyway, well, I don't know. He's a big Republican. I haven't been in touch with him in a while. Anyway, so I said something along the lines of, Mom, I just want you to know that I'm never going to marry Jeff Kanger, and it's not just because he's gay, but because I am, too. Or no, I said something about that, the Jeff thing was later. What I said was, Mom, I want you to know that all of us, I meant me and my three best friends, who she had known since we were kids, I was like, all of us are gay. And she was like, what? And I said, I'm just kidding, only me. And she kind of like, she was kind of like being a little, like just keeping herself busy, like playing with something with her hands. She was like, is this one of your jokes? Because we would always like kind of fuck with her and like just, I don't know. And she was like, are you, really? You are? And I was like, yeah, and then she started bawling. She's like, I've always known, honey. And she was, like, crying, and my friends were crying, and she was giving all of us hugs. And she was like, you know, for the longest time, I thought you were just an awkward, weird kid. But now I know why. I know it's because you're gay, and it's okay. And she just, like, was so excited about the whole thing. She loved it.
My mom didn't really think that, like, she was cool with it, but she wasn't convinced.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
She thought, oh, Carolyn's kind of dramatic.
Did she think it was like was it the phase thing that some parents think?
Maybe
or?
A phase. She said, like,
Carolyn's
well, don't.
Dramatic.
yeah, that'd be a very dramatic thing to do. She said, well, don't feel like you have to go sewing this into your underwear. I'm like, how do you think I'm using my underwear?
Yeah.
I like student council treasurer in
right.
it. Anyway, student council, that was one thing, like, when I was thinking about, you know, the repercussions of me being gay, because I was in high school, I had this girlfriend from another school, and I'm like, if people find out at my school, I'm on student council, and what kind of, that'll be such a scandal. I thought people cared more about student council than they actually did.
Nobody it was the outside biggest, of student council ever cared about it.
It was the biggest thing in my life,
yeah,
so
me
I
too.
Thought everybody was going to care. I'm like, as a student council officer... I cannot.
I have a duty to uphold to my constituents.
But like, some of my closest friends started finding out. And then, like, of course, once you get past, like, the closest best friends, anyone who finds out, like, they're obviously going to tell other people.
Right.
But there were, like, some things before people knew. Like, when I got out of that first relationship, I was, like, all I wanted to do was make out with women all the time. Like, now that I knew, like, how great it was to be a lesbian and, like, what everyone else was experiencing with guys, I'm like, ugh, I need to find more. Where are these lesbians?
Yeah.
So once I looked up a gay bar online. So in I grew up in Buffalo for the most part. In Buffalo, when you're like 16, 17, you get a fake ID saying you're 19 so you can drive to Canada and go out in Canada.
Man.
So my friends and I.
Steps to go to a bar.
Yeah. Right? So my friends and I, we would go out in Canada, and I would always volunteer to be the designated driver because I'm very fun. And
student council treasurer.
Honestly, it was just because I didn't trust anyone else.
Yeah.
I didn't trust anyone else to not accidentally get drunk and then be in a bad situation. So I would just volunteer to be designated driver. So I lied a lot around that time just to cover up my gayness. And I was like, oh, my sister told me about this cool bar. It's right next to Clifton Hill. And it was this gay bar that I found online, which back in those days, the internet was so basic that it was some janky website. You really couldn't tell what this bar was going to be like.
Yeah.
So we drive there and we like pull up in front of the bar and they're like, this is what your sister told you. And there's like this big rainbow flag, but it is definitely like this leather, bear gay man bar. And I was like, darn it, she was playing a joke on me.
Well, guess we better go in.
Oh, no. I was like, immediately, I was like, abort, abort.
Yeah.
Like, they're on to me.
Yeah.
I would, like, I remember once after homecoming, I drove to in front of this lesbian bar in Buffalo, and I was like, gonna try to sneak in. Instead, I just parked outside and watched all the lesbians come in. And you've done that too?
There was one gay bar in Albuquerque that I was like, right when I started college, I was like, oh, maybe I'll go there someday. And then I would just like drive by it really extra slowly just to be like, look, there's some people. Like, oh, it's a hole. And
then just keep driving. Oh, I guess I'll just keep going.
Yeah. Oh, so nerve-wracking.
What was everyone's first kiss with a lady?
Mine might be the gayest.
All right, I want to hear
I'm sure
then.
It is.
Okay.
All your stories so far have been absolutely the gayest.
So my first kiss with a girl was super gay. We were watching Girl Interrupted. And this was the woman who's my first girlfriend. And she loved Angelina Jolie
so much
that her name tag at work was Angelina.
So
she never came out and said she was gay to me. But she was like,
That's enough. I think that's all you really need to do.
She had a big rainbow on her bedroom wall and pictures of Angelina Jolie all over. So I knew that she was definitely gay. And I would also make up stuff to just kind of drop hints. Though my sister would sometimes call me gay, just that's a thing that sisters do. But
right.
Like my sister never like really thought that I was gay. So I would really play that up though to get her to think like, oh, is she trying to tell me like without saying that?
Yeah.
So she was big on like holding hands with other girls, but in high school that might like not mean anything. So we're on her bed, on her water bed.
Oh, oh yes. Sexual.
I know my first time having sex with a woman was in a waterbed.
I have not seen a waterbed since I was a kid.
I had one in college. Yeah.
Amazing.
You had one in college?
Yeah.
What? That is amazing.
It was hilarious.
The last one is in the Smithsonian now, I think.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist anymore.
Very weird to, like, ironically own a bed, but, like, that was totally how I was in college. I was like, look at my waterbed!
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. So we were on her waterbed. We're watching Girl Interrupted, and we were holding hands during it.
Okay.
And then at the part where there's, like, a girl-on-girl kiss.
They're in the van after they escape.
In the van. Yes, yes.
Oh, we're familiar. Yeah. 1 hour, 42 minutes
in.
Yes,
that's the actual timestamp.
We squeezed hands. like when that happened, it was kind of like, okay,
oh my
we're
god,
both into this, but then like waited until the end of the movie,
yes,
and then started making out. And
so, like, the end, like, the credits, or, like, when yeah. Daisy is...
The credits.
Okay.
The credits.
Okay, yeah.
I was just like, that's a little morbid.
When I know,
Brittany
I know.
Murphy's lifeless body is just God. Like, oh, that's so sad. I kind of forgot for a second that she is... Never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
And the worst.
And then as soon as we stopped, I said... Well, I guess I can't be president anymore.
Oh,
because at the time I was very ambitious.
Hilarious.
And that was my first worry, was like my political ambitions.
Your political career.
Are over, because I just kissed a woman. And then also, I had never been wet before.
Oh, yeah.
And walking out
that
of that
feeling,
room, I was like,
you're like
what
sliding out of that room. Yeah. Like, that feeling, I remember that feeling too, of like, oh, my body is now reacting to...
Yes, I never had
something.
That before.
Never. Never, not once.
It was
yeah.
crazy. I didn't even
same
know how I was
going
to walk to my car.
I know. I felt like it lasted for like a week. Like it was so... Yeah. Like the trauma of it. Like the like the fucking aftershocks were like so...
Yeah.
Mine was with this woman who is now married to a guy, of course. But she was like a... It was in Kansas City after a Kansas City Royals game. She was like a friend of a friend, I think. I don't even know who the fuck. I don't know how she was in the story, but I remember vividly the date because it was the day of the opening ceremonies of the 08 Olympics. So it was August 8th. And so it's really only been like 9 years that I've been like, you know, sexually active or whatever. But so anyway, so I remember this like this girl was there. And she was at the game with us, and we were all tailgating and drinking, and she was a friend of a friend. And she, throughout the night, kept, like, sitting closer to me, standing closer to me, and, like, playfully, like, she, like, smacked my butt at one point, and I was like, oh, shit, like, is this what flirting is? Like, I don't know what this is. And we went back to our mutual friend's house, and she kind of cornered me in the kitchen and basically just kissed me, and it was like... I literally, my fucking entire body just, like, react. Like, I was so, I felt like all my nerve endings were, like, electrified. And I was like, okay, that's what this
should feel
is.
Like. Yeah.
This is what it should feel like. And yeah. This is why my friends have been losing their minds over boys since they were 14. Because this
yes.
is what they felt with them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, no wonder they're crazy. Because
yeah.
now I'm fucking crazy. Like, I was immediately, like, you know when you're, like, a baby lesbian and... Anyone you kiss, you just immediately are in love with. Like
yeah,
that,
yeah.
I was just like, I was obsessed with her, and I never even fucking saw her again after that. So lame, but and now she's married
just
to a guy. So whatever.
Drawn pictures of her in your notebook.
Yeah.
How about you, other Sarah?
So it's the nerdiest story, really, because there was this girl who went to high school, but she was like a year older than me, and she was friends with my friend Joey. And I was like, your friend Aaron. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, she's like gay, right? And then he was like, yeah. Do you want to talk to her? And I was like, yeah. And then he was like, so then like, I think he even just gave me her like AOL Instant Messenger name.
Oh, shit.
And so we started like talking on that. And then we were talking about Ani DiFranco a lot. And then like, she was just like, and she at the same time, she like always was getting into trouble. And she was like not a good influence. But she's kind of figured it out now. But at the time, she was like, it was like the first day of us like even talking with each other about stuff. And it was so neat to even have somebody to talk about, compare all the my research that I had.
Yeah.
And be like, did you watch this? Did you see this? Do you know about this? And so she was like, you know what? I'm coming over to your house. And I was like, what? Like, what? And my parents were like sleeping. And so we like sat on my front porch.
Uh-huh.
And like, I wasn't going to leave with her or anything, but we were just like sitting and talking on the porch. And then, like, we're talking about all this stuff, and she's smoking cigarettes, and then, like, she was, like, we were talking about Nigella Lawson, the chef cook lady, and I was just like, oh, my
yeah.
God, she's my wife, I love her so much, and she was just like, uh-huh, your wife, uh-huh, and then, the this is so nerdy. She, like, seriously, at one point, just goes, do you like Tegan and Sarah? And I was like, oh, my God, somebody else knows who they
yeah.
are. Yes, and then she was like, I have their CDs in my car, do you want to just, like... drive around and listen to them. And I was like, and she had like a Z, like a Nissan, you know, the like, yeah. Yeah. sports car. And so then yeah. I was just like, what is happening? Yeah. I've never like snuck out of my house ever. And but I seriously was like, yes, let's go into yeah. your car and we're going to go drive around and listen
she
to this.
She could have said like, do you want to go commit murder? And you're like, yeah,
yes,
let's do it.
Yes,
let's
absolutely.
Go do anything.
Yeah. So then she gave me the CDs so I could burn them. And I was just like, this is the nicest thing ever. And then she would come over like every night and we'd hang out on my front porch. And then one day she was like, I'm sucking at math. Can you like help me with math? And I was like, you're not bad at math. You're very smart. And then she just like...
She pulled a Katie from Mean Girls.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then she like kissed me just right on my front porch. And it was just like... It felt like there was like almost like a light pole in my yeah. like whole from like my heart all the way down, and you could just feel it like whoosh, like yeah. And it was just like this exactly what you were saying. Yeah. I was like, oh my god, everything makes sense, because I really honestly thought that kissing was just like a social construct. Like it was just like, sure. oh, you do this as like an act of affection or whatever, yeah. and then you're like, oh no, people kiss because it's amazing.
Yeah,
yeah,
it was awesome.
Yeah, because I made out with a guy once at a club just because all my friends had made out with guys yeah. before. And I'm like, oh, they're going to make fun of me so hard if, like, I graduate high school without having made out with a guy. So I just made out with this guy. Who knows how old he was, because we were, like, 16-year-olds sneaking into clubs. And it was disgusting. I was like, this yeah. is terrible. I don't know. You know, I think being a lesbian is good for developing hobbies at an early age, because you're not really
with
like
the absence
it takes
of boys
you a
in
while.
Your
yeah, it takes you a while to figure stuff up. So I was like really into politics or really into things that none of yeah. all my friends were just
discussing.
You're the discussing
closest thing to Leslie Knope that I've ever met in yeah. real life. This is amazing. It's awesome.
That honestly, the movie Election,
yes,
filmed in my high school actually.
Wow.
Did you know that?
I think you did tell
yeah.
me that at one point.
I've never
and
seen
you've
it.
Never seen it.
I know. Isn't that weird?
No.
Filmed in my high school. I was in middle school at the time, but yeah, they changed the sign on the local
character
high
in
school.
It.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I gotta see this movie.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome. I love that movie, but Tracy Flick.
Yeah.
kind of. It was like a cautionary tale for me. Like, I saw that and I was like, oh, I am heading towards this very fast. Like, that's how much I'm not that awful of a person, but that's how much it meant to me.
Right.
To,
student council
to
was
be
a big deal.
Council.
I went to high school with a definite Tracy Flick, and she, like, she drove herself to the point of, like, having panic attacks over student council, and, like, she, the politicking, the inner circle fights amongst the executive board and everything.
Oh, yeah.
It was a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did go to the national conference in Buffalo once.
Oh.
Yeah.
Were you guys...
It was a national, this was in 2003? Were we there at the same time? That's how I went to New York for the first time, because our pre-student council trip was there.
I know. I went to this, like, yeah, this huge gathering of student council officers
yeah.
that was in Buffalo.
You guys.
I think we were there at the same time.
This is insane.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that until you mentioned that. I was like, no, I think I went to this thing.
Yeah, that's how I saw New York City for the first time. We went on our, like, 3-day pre-trip through, like, to New York City, and then we rode a bus all the way up to Buffalo.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was so excited for that thing. I was like,
oh, it
big
was, like,
leagues.
The apex of my life. Like,
yeah.
It was the ultimate gathering of student council nerds, and it was amazing.
Okay, we only have a little bit of time left.
Okay.
I do want to, how do you guys deal with, because coming out, it's not a one-time thing. It's, like, mm-hmm. throughout your life, you're constantly coming out. I know for me, a lot of people assume that I'm straight, I think because I leave my strap on at home most days. And
most days.
We're happy that you brought it today,
days.
Though.
Yeah, I
thanks.
Did bring it today. I'm wearing it right now. Both Sarahs are looking at me very uncomfortably this whole time.
I love
no.
this.
no, but, and it's, yeah, it's a thing. It's like, how do I let people know immediately so that there is no awkward moment? Because my whole life has been these awkward mm-hmm. moments of people assuming I'm straight. And it's just like, my name's Carolyn, and a lot of people call me Caroline, and I hate correcting them just because it's like, ugh, it's so annoying. It's just mm-hmm. like, actually,
yeah.
it's Carolyn. And be like, actually, I'm a lesbian
yeah.
when they assume I'm straight. So as soon as I can get it out there, I'll say, oh, my wife
right.
or this. So right away.
So Is that they kind know. Of your go-to move is like sort of finding a seamless way to mention...
To mention my wife. But before having a wife, when it was just a girlfriend, people still use girlfriends the way my mom, yeah. you know, has her trip with her girlfriends. And they're definitely yeah. not diking out, I hope. And so I guess trying to let them know as soon as possible to avoid that weird assumption, because then that can also invite those weird questions.
Oh yeah,
the weird follow ups. So if I just drop it casually, then usually they'll let it go. What about you?
I mean, I think the only context that I'm even really worried about it now, because living in New York makes it a lot easier. But
yeah,
like,
everyone's yeah. gay here.
Job interviews. Like, yeah. I've gone on a couple of them where I'm just like, well, I mean, this is the fanciest, not this right now, but like I'll wear like my fanciest clothes and it'll still be like, oh, it's definitely not girly, but here we go. And then yeah. so I'm like sitting there and I'm like, I don't want you to think that I don't know how to dress myself. I'm doing this on purpose. But like, but also I don't know, like it's illegal for them to ask me if I have a girlfriend. So then is sure. it illegal for me to like self-disclose that I have a girlfriend? Or like not illegal, yeah. but is it like, and then will that jeopardize yeah. me getting oh, okay. the job or whatever? And then, so then usually my go-to move is to show up in the office as early as possible and just look around and see if there's anybody remotely gay-ish looking there. Yeah. So then I can be like, okay, I can be a little bit more relaxed about this. But then if not, then I usually have to be like, okay, well,
yeah,
da, 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 like just yeah. like raise the pitch of my voice mm-hmm. or like do some other stuff and just wait until I'm hired and then do the girlfriend thing. Just be like, oh, me and my girlfriend or
yeah,
okay. Make it. For me, honestly, my appearance at this point is so androgynous and so fucking clearly, like, I feel yeah. like anyone who might think I'm straight is, I haven't met anyone in so long that's been either, that's, like, said anything around me indicating that I'm, like, under the assumption that I'm straight. I don't know. It's been a while, and it's, I wear men's clothing, and I'm 6 feet tall, and I have short hair, and I actually get called sir more often than a lot of people probably would be comfortable with. I love it, because for the briefest moment, I benefit from male privilege.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, and then it's over. Like, it's like this little flash in the pan of, like, privilege. Oh, it's nope, no more.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I look the part so much that it's just no longer a question. But I remember before I cut my hair short and, you know, kind of came into the aesthetic that I'm comfortable in now, I think I would just have to tell people that I was gay, but I would only do it if, I don't know, I would just kind of like let my sexuality just kind of go away. Like I wouldn't, with any acquaintances or anything, I wouldn't say anything, but I would not say anything. I would just kind of uncomfortably wait for that moment to present itself. But
well,
it was a constant process.
It's a weird thing, especially with when you're talking about like the Army don't ask, don't tell, mm-hmm. Which is no longer in place, but maybe reinstated based yeah. on how things are going. And people are like, well, what's so hard? Why can't you keep it to yourself? I'm like, how many times do straight people let everyone know they're straight?
Right. Yeah.
Constantly.
But they don't think about it because they don't have to.
Yeah, they don't.
It's the norm, yeah.
Exactly. So it's how can you keep that part of your life secret when sometimes it's like the person that you share your life with?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you have to bring it up or people are going to ask you, especially like if you're in the military and it's a bunch of dudes, they're going to ask you about the ladies you've been doing and
all
other sorts of dude talk. And you can't just like lie the whole time. I mean, you could, and that's what people did for years, but it's very uncomfortable. And I find like, I know my ex-wife was in situations where we used to live in Georgia and she worked in the suburbs. So Atlanta was pretty cool. I worked at a university and there was one person in every department who was gay. And actually the dean of the college set up like gay happy hours for gay staff.
Nice.
So yeah, in Georgia that was pretty cool. But she worked in the suburbs and was terrified of them. Not terrified, but like would be so uncomfortable if they knew she was gay.
Yeah.
So she like kept to herself and never really got too close to people from work because she didn't want to have to have them find out. So it's like your option is either to close yourself off or to be almost kind of weird. Like people know you're hiding something.
Yeah.
You know? And coming out is a way, I think, where you can truly finally be yourself. Mm-hmm. That was when I finally, like, so much of life made sense to me once I came out and figured out I was gay and explained so much for me about, like, why I never felt normal, why I always felt weird.
Answered every question. Like, it, yeah. it just, it turns every uncertainty into like, oh, this is just what that is.
Yeah, and it,
like
it also...
final Rubik's Cube just, like, coming into place, and now it's all put together.
Yeah. I think yeah. it also, like, I felt confident for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of confidence that you get with no longer caring about what men think.
Oh, my God. Isn't it just it's the most blissful existence
it
ever.
It really is. Like, this goes back to me feeling that. Bad for straight women.
Yeah.
Okay, so but before we wrap up on this first episode of Dyking Out, we're going to end with talking about something that's coming up tomorrow night. On Sunday, it's going to be the MTV Video Music Awards,
yeah.
which I don't know when the last time I've watched a full... I mean, maybe I probably live tweet it now that I'm a comedian and have to do those things, but... There have been many gay moments in VMA history, and we're going to share our favorite ones right now. And I'm going to start by talking about Madonna making out with Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera. Yes.
Oh, did really?
Oh, yeah. It was both of them.
So
what?
When I first watched that.
I'm going to be furiously Googling this on the way to work.
I was talking on the phone to a friend of mine because back then you used to talk on the phone and watch things with your friends if you weren't in the same room.
Yep.
And I just like dropped the phone.
Yeah.
And I was like, did you just see? And I'm like, how can I watch that again? Oh, did I just miss it? Like, because I mean, we already established I was obsessed with Madonna. Mm-hmm. So then seeing her like. Make out like full on like open mouth kiss Britney Spears, but the most obnoxious thing was they cut away to a reaction shot of Justin Timberlake.
Yeah,
because we have to know how men feel right. about everything.
Now, how did his boner feel about this?
And
they might as well put a microphone in his pants.
Well, he looked like not amused.
Yeah, he was.
But
not
when
thrilled.
They cut away to him was right when Madonna was going in for her kiss with Christina.
So you just saw the after of them like looking
what?
At each other and.
Yeah, you saw her, like, going in, but you never saw the contact between her and Christina, and MTV robbed us of that just to get a stupid, boring reaction shot.
I will never forgive them for that.
Of Justin Timberlake, and it was, like, such, yes, I know I should be against, like, publicity stunt lesbian
right.
kissing, but sometimes...
Sometimes it's hot.
Yeah.
The moment that I wanted... I don't know. I was kind of looking through, like, VMA history today, and that is obviously the one that sticks out the most. But this is sort of related, but not VMAs. But I think at the MTV Movie Awards...
Oh, no. You're going to say mine.
Is it the Selma Blair?
No. This is better.
Oh, okay. Thinking of, like, didn't they reenact that Cruel Intentions kiss on stage, or did I make that up in my head?
They won Best...
They
kiss
won best. Is that what it was?
Something,
I think they won best kiss, and then maybe they kissed on stage.
Maybe they did, but and then it just reminded me of the Cruel Intentions kiss. So of course, I fell into like a YouTube wormhole and watched it again because it was like my favorite thing ever.
Yeah,
but I don't know why I thought that was a VMA. It doesn't make any sense.
Especially if you
musicians.
Were a Buffy fan.
Yeah, that was a big deal
because.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
I also loved Selma Blair.
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Oh well, yeah. But Sarah Michelle Gellar. Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
What was yours?
Okay, mine was also at the Movie Awards, which is now dive-bombing this entire this segment.
This whole segment.
But my senior year during the Movie Awards, I was on my senior trip, and we were in a hotel, and I turned on the Movie Awards, and Tattoo was performing.
Yes.
And
yes.
That was such a big deal for me, because we had their CD. Like, I had their
I
CD.
I thought
and
was I the VMAs.
Well, no? Everything. Oh. I think they were also in the Russian VMAs, and they won a Russian VMA right around that same, the only year that they were famous. But, like... I had songs of theirs in Russian before they released their English-only one because I was just like, this is a precious thing.
Yeah.
This is an amazing thing.
I am impressed.
You have curated all of lesbian history throughout your teen and young adult years.
You know,
it's really impressive.
Those UCB kids that did that have the Nancy Kerrigan Museum, and they've turned it into like this whole thing. Do you guys know the Nancy Kerrigan?
No, I don't know. What's the Nancy Kerrigan Museum?
They did it. They made it in the hallway of their apartment, and they just have like pictures and stuff. And then they also found things on eBay that were like real
trinkets and
stuff.
Yeah.
And they put that in, and then they charge people money to come see the...
I have such a crush on Nancy Kerrigan.
Me too!
Oh, God.
Oh, my. So then I would love to do that just like in a room the size of this... You can't see this podcast studio, you guys, but it's like a...
Very small.
It's like a 4x6 foot room. I would love to do like a lesbian museum of just like...
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Put on these headphones. This is the Russian version of Tattoo.
Yes.
And they're like, look over here.
This is the bootleg copy of The L Word that I watched for the first time that had Japanese subtitles
oh my gosh.
Under it.
And then like, here's Dusty Springfield. Did you know she was like, there's one where it's just like, did you know she was gay? And you have to like open up a box and be like, what? And like shut it again. That kind of stuff. I would love to like curate.
I think we're going to be making a museum because I'm on board with this. Another gay VMA moment, which really shouldn't have been gay, but for some reason was also like a first thought, was when Michael Jackson and Lisa Marie Presley made out.
Yeah.
Because they were just like obviously each other's beards.
Oh yeah.
Like not that Michael Jackson was gay, but he was hiding shit.
Yeah.
And Lisa Marie Presley, I think people thought that she was a lesbian and that was why she entered into it and for publicity and whatnot. And that kiss was
that kiss
like
was
the
weirdest,
so awkward and terrible. But there was something like super queer about it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's it for Dyking Out today. Sarah, do you want to plug any upcoming shows?
I don't have any really upcoming shows. Shit, sorry. I was like, why do you think I have shows?
Sarah Kennedy. Where can we see you?
Well, I mean, it's hard because by the time this like is out, like a bunch of them have passed. Just because
I think we'll get this out Monday, maybe.
Oh, that's cool. Well, then come see me tonight if it's Monday. I'm on Side Ponytail at Friends and Lovers.
Ooh, that's a good show.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. But then also, I mean, my website is Sarah K. Comedy, and I keep my calendar pretty up to date there.
Yeah, so check that out. Sarah's so funny. Other Sarah York and I, we both write for the show The Box you mentioned. You can find us on Facebook at We Are The Box Show or on YouTube. Look up some of our digital content. YouTube/The Box Show. There is a really funny video that we recently released that Sarah wrote called Brotex.
Yeah,
that's a fun one.
It's a great video.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would check that out. You can go to my website, cbcomedy.com, to see where I'm doing stand-up. And follow Dyking Out on social media and our website and everything. And keep listening. Thanks for tuning in. And let's dyke out soon.
Yay!
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.